confidence yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show on a Thursday with Stevie and Conan. And we're previewing the league finals, lads. Four games at the weekend, and they're all live on TG4. TG Cahir. I get pulled up a lot about that. I've been attacked by these people for long enough on Twitter. So they're on TG Cahir. All four games. Two on Saturday. Carla Leash, Armagh, Fermanagh. Can't imagine be too many neutrals going along to those two games, considering the scorelines in both their respective games.
I certainly wouldn't imagine so. But there will be a large, Armagh following. We do travel in good numbers, all of us. And you would imagine that Carlow will have a huge following. Probably the whole of the county will be outside of Carlow heading towards Croke Park this week. So it'll still be a good enough atmosphere, and it'll be a great occasion for the players to play in.
Yeah, it will. Okay. But you do accept my point that not many neutrals are going along to watch these.
Certainly not many neutrals, no.
We'll talk about them a little bit in part three, because I imagine the games on Saturday are going to be two dour affairs, and there'll be tactical battles or whatever kind of descriptions want to be
chess
put on
them. Games, is it
games of chess as well, yeah. Games of chess. The two hurling games are on TG Cahir as well, so they're providing a great service this weekend.
Is there subtitles with them all, though? That's what I want to know.
Well, listen, my innocent question about asking for an option in English behind a red button now, not changing it, isn't it mad the way a Twitter mob will twist something that you say? And then you're attacked for a day on Twitter by a mob, and they can basically say whatever they want to you. And
I just can't believe that you would actually be attacked on Twitter for anything that you tweet.
Yeah, I didn't think this was on the lower scale of things I've been attacked for on Twitter, really. It's just an innocent option behind a red button. Anyways, I'm not getting into that.
We had subtitles for the Cooley game, yeah, if you wanted.
Yeah, exactly, we did. Because the big game, obviously, is on Sunday, and that's Dublin Galway. So we'll spend a bit more time talking about that in part two, about the tactics that we're going to see. But one thing I saw, Kieran Cunningham tweeted this about Dublin, and I thought it was interesting. And he was tweeting that Dublin's forward line, arguably this summer, could be Scully, Costello, Mannion, Rock, Kilkenny, and O'Callaghan. Basquel is in the mix too. He's only 22. So there's two of those fellas are 24. Two of them are under 24, and Rock is the oldest at 28. Now, you could easily see that forward line. Absolutely, definitely see it. I think it's a mistake if Jim tries to turn this team around too fast and lose some of the older fellas. And the reason I think it'll be a mistake, because every manager is so desperate to create a new team and bring these young lads through, and it always seems to be an obsession with bringing the young lads through. Dublin need to be looking over the shoulder at Kerry. Kerry have a young team, very young team coming through that are not quite there yet. But you're closing the gap to Kerry's young guns by picking loads of young guns yourself. Do you know what I mean? I think the Kerry young fellas are going to be looking at the Paddy Andrews, the Dear McConnellys, the Paul Flynn's, the Kevin McManamans going, we're not quite at those lads' level yet. But they might look at Mannion, Conor Callaghan, and go, you know, these lads aren't that much older than us. I think picking a really young Dublin team when he doesn't necessarily have to yet could be giving Kerry more hope.
They're not much older, but they're quality players. They're serious forwards, so they are.
But that's not the point. I know
it's not the point, but I still believe that Paddy Andrews will be a mainstay in the Dublin attack. He'll probably play a full forward most of the games. With Kevin McManaman, he'll still play the role that he's played for the last 7-8 years, coming off the bench and changing games and turning it around when they have to. And listen, with a team with Paddy Andrews in the full forward line, if you had Mannion one side of him, Rock the other side of him, and a half forward line full of energy with Costello, Kilkenny and Scully boys he got there, you know, I still think that works for Dublin.
Conor Callaghan will be in that half forward line as well. It's more the point of moving the older lads on, and there is a push with Dublin, and you look through their team now and it's like the team from 2011 is pushed out to the side almost now.
Yeah, it is. It's not even about age for me, because you mentioned Conor Callaghan, who is just that bit of quality, so
he has
matter.
To come in. Yeah.
So it's, I'd be a bit more concerned about the type of player that they're replacing these boys with. Like, are they a little bit in danger of becoming a bit robotic, where everything's a bit predictable? Now, listen, that will beat 30 teams easily every single week, because they're faster, they're probably, like, they're safer, they won't make as many mistakes, they're, you know, well drilled, but they just don't have that sort of same quality yet, anyway, as, like, you know, Dear McConnelly, you mentioned Kevin McManaman, Bernard Brogan, the sort of game winners that they've needed to win All-Ireland in the last six years.
They don't carry the, I suppose, the baggage that comes with the pressure of big game situation. Young players just take to the field most of the time and just play what they see. And, you know, certainly Conor Callan, you look at some of the goals he scored last year, you know, we spoke about it maybe 2 or 3 years ago, you'll never see a goal like Owen Mulligan scored again, and Conor Callan just blitzes through the fences like he done last year. So
He took too many steps and he didn't do two dummies. I wouldn't compare it to Mulligan's.
I wouldn't compare it to Mulligan's, but he took it from deep and he still managed to wiggle his way around the fence. So, you know, players they got there, Mannion and all, they just go out and play with total freedom, and that's a great thing to see. So it is. So they don't have the pressure on their shoulders that the older players do.
Yeah, maybe not. But the point I'm going to make about this, and the reason that I thought it was interesting, is because when I made my debut in 1998, right, we played Kildare. We beat Westmeath the first day and we played Kildare the second day. Now, we picked 7 of our under-21s on the starting team. It could have been 8. Mm-hmm. And we were young and we were cocky and we had been very successful underage. We came up against Kildare. I looked through that Kildare team and saw Nuxer Buckley and Glenn Ryan and Willie McCreary and Eddie McCormack, and they were 28, 29, 30. And I was like, whoa. Do you know what I mean? They were established men that I was thinking in my head, even being cocky as a young fella, I was thinking, I'm not at the... we have a bit to go before their level. Whereas when they went on and the Kildare lads that were 3 or 4 years older, I was like, wouldn't worry too much about these lads.
Yeah, but that was an experienced Kildare team that went to an All-Ireland final that year and possibly, you know, could have won it, you know. But the difference between this Dublin group of boys is that they have gone to All-Irelands, they've won All-Irelands, so they have that experience even for the young fellas. So, you know, it's a totally different scenario. I know you've won All-Ireland minor, but it's totally different winning a minor to senior and having that experience behind you as well.
I will accept that point.
He was the last thing he saw that day, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even though me going, whoa, we're not at that level,
I think you sent him to Chicago and he hasn't come back since.
he never recovered from that shoulder I gave him.
But you're right, like, you look at the last couple of games though, and like, you don't want to read too much into it because they had the job done, but the players maybe aren't just showing that same audacity that Conor Callaghan does show, because he is just that level ahead of them. They're just playing with a bit more fear, maybe, like they're doing the right thing, but they're not taking men on and winning games themselves, whereas the older boys that you mentioned aren't afraid to lose the ball and do something that will win the game.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and definitely about Dublin. If you look at their stats, and I get sent stats by a fella called Sean Murphy, GAA Statsman is his tag, and he showed me the scoring zones from Dublin game against Galway. All Dublin scores were there was no crazy shots. Some of Galway's one or two were outside the 45, one or two, they were scattered randomly. Yeah. Dublin's had a pattern to where Dublin are shooting from. They're not shooting from areas that you're missing, and you're right, Conan. They are very kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of,
it's like a machine,
formulaic, like a machine. But like, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm telling you now, almost 100% sure that most of them scores came from the D area, and that's something that a quality coach will try to encourage his team to do, is work the ball into the score zone, which is the circular area of the D, and kick the points from there. People that, you know, practice shooting from further out the field will never get anywhere. You have to practice shooting from that score zone where 90% of games are won, and that's the difference in teams being successful and teams being unsuccessful.
But it's still moments of magic that win the All-Ireland. Look at Dublin, like McMenamin changed that game in 2011. Bernard Brogan's flick, a little bit audacious. Yeah. You know, Cormac Costello off both feet coming on 2016.
Yeah, even Connolly's impact last year as well.
You still need that quality to get over the line.
I think you do. No, we'll talk about the Dublin Galway game a little bit next, because the Waterford manager has been McGlinchey, yeah, he's been given out about the dead rubber game between Waterford and
Leitrim.
So what he's saying, Waterford could have gone fourth if they'd beaten Leitrim, and that would be a nice boost for Waterford. They've had a disastrous league, but they beat London the last time and they could end up on 4 points, which psychologically you'd be like, right, we finished fourth and it's an awful lot better than finishing second last, and he says it's a dead rubber to everybody else, but it's not a dead rubber to us. We only have 9 guaranteed competitive games and this is one of them. And like, I mean, all games are absolutely important, and he made a really good point. He said that our game against London didn't have any consequences. So it was the second last game. London and Waterford For all extensive purposes, it was a dead rubber as well, really. Yeah. You could say it was null and void. Waterford paid 12 grand to go over to London to fulfil that fixture, because it's not a meaningless game. It's a game for a reason. He said if this is the case, that games that don't mean anything, if they can just be called off, they could have just accepted the €500 fine for not going to London
and saved
11 and a half grand for the county board. Like, I mean, isn't that gas? Like, I mean, I know it would have had a knock on effect, but if the Division 2 games were being seen out this weekend, the Division 4 games should probably have been seen out as well.
I can totally see his point. Listen, it's the last chance for Waterford to have a quality game before the championship. I think he also made the point that because of where they are based as well, it's quite difficult for them to get challenge games as well. So, you know, you can totally see his reasoning behind it. And if I was a manager in his position, I'd be frustrated as well, because you want to try to get as many good quality games to your and afford them to your players as you possibly can, especially given the fact that it's the last real strong quality game that he would have before the championship.
Yeah, in the GAA's defence, the two games, a lot of people are saying that, oh, it's because it's Division 4 that nobody cares. Division 2 games would have been called off too, only there's something riding on them. Like, Down have an outside chance of staying up if they win their game and Meath lose to Louth, so that's why they're being played. And another thing is, if these dead rubber games, we'll call them, in Division 4 are played, then Laoise Carlow, one of them includes Laois and Antrim, so Laois Carlow will be pushed back into April. So like, there is knock on effects, and it's not, they're not being targeted because they're Division 4. They're being kind of null and void to obviously suit having all the finals on the
same
weekend.
But I also think that Fergal McGill might have come out and said that the reason behind that game being cancelled and postponed was to give the clubs in those particular counties an opportunity to have their players.
Patrick Gallagher from Antrim has been complaining about it as well, and he says, I know the boys, and maybe didn't get much game time as they would have liked, would have been hoping for a game. So a dead rubber might sound like it's nothing, but it's a chance, like Armagh Wexford, to play your panel lads, keep them all happy. So they are important games. There's no point in saying they're not important games. He said Patrick is saying he made his debut against Loud in a dead rubber, and it was his first ever start, and he was delighted to get the game. He says that dead rubber for me was massive. So if it had happened then, I would have been ripping. You know what I mean? Ripping. Yeah. Dead rubbers are opportunities for fellas. A fella on a panel that might get to play for their county and not make the panel next year. And they always have that. I played a league game from a county. You know,
There's never a dead rubber. You know, well, if there's a dead rubber, why do teams and so many managers want to play challenge games? It's to give their players game time. And that was an opportunity. There's no doubt that it was a real good opportunity for Waterford to play a top quality game.
And what's the point of playing any of the last three games in Division 4 if you can't get relegated? If you're not in a promotion shakeup, you might as well just not play any of them.
Especially going to London if it's costing 12 grand. Like, I'd be saying, if I was teams heading to London, nothing to play for next year with two games left, I don't think so. I'll write the cheque for 500 there.
You get a nice piss up in London though.
But I thought it was very interesting with these games, and they can be just null and void and just thrown away at the drop of a hat when it suits them. Because remember during the FBD League, we were talking about the Connacht Council, and the Roscommon played Galway in, they were both qualified for the final, but they had to play each other in the last group game. And we were saying, wouldn't it make an awful lot of sense, because the schedule is so tight, to just play the final next week and give them that 2 weeks before the league starts?
And they played
Connacht
that
Council
game,
says absolutely not. No, we have to, this is what John Prenti, the Connacht Council CEO, says. You have to respect the integrity of the competition. You can't be moving goalposts mid-season, right? Isn't that brilliant, considering we know that they've just moved goalposts and not respected the integrity of a much more important competition just to suit themselves? Like, I mean, that kind of sums up GAA administrators for me.
Yeah, and it feels like another nail in the coffin of rendering the league a bit pointless. Like, you know, some people in a lot of counties feel like, you know, they're not being respected much in the Super 8s. You know, weaker counties don't like that. And something like this then, when you're just allowed to call off games and abandon a crucial game for somebody's season, Like, that makes all our counties think nobody gives a shit about us. Yeah. It doesn't help.
Yeah. No, it definitely doesn't help. I want to talk about Kildare here briefly, lads, because I was reading some rumours in the local papers in Kildare about there potentially being trouble in the camp. And Keane O'Neill has come out and he's denied that there's any trouble in the camp. Ben McCormack has left the squad, but he's got a job in Sligo or somewhere like that, so for genuine reasons. And after the loss to Kerry and Killarney, they went on the beer that night, which is fair enough. Keane O'Neill says they knew they were relegated and they were away, so they went for a few pints. But yeah. I think people are trying to read into things and put two and two together and say, oh, well, they've lost so many games. But an interesting thing is, do you know this? They're 3 weeks away from having played a full year and not won a game. It's not incredible. They haven't won a game since they beat Meath. I think it's since they beat Meath.
It's quite a long time, yeah.
In the championship last year. Unbelievable run they're on.
It's a long time for a team that's played Division 1 football this year. You know, you would have expected that they would have won more games in the championship last year. I'm sure they have. Sure they went to.
They won two. They beat Laois and they beat Meath very impressively and then lost to Dublin, and that started their...
Surely that was in championship then, so that wouldn't be over a year in 3 weeks' time since they won a game.
No, well, when are we in April? Sure, the championship would have started in May last year.
Lost to our man, Crewe Park then. Doesn't seem like such a good win anymore.
No.
And they were doing okay with Dublin.
But they were still competitive in a number of games. Their first game against Dublin, they were competitive to an extent in that particular game. They were down in Kerry as well. And the game that I commentated on at home to Tyrone, you know, that was a game that they should have won.
Yeah, so, and Monaghan, they only lost by a point at home. So, like, on the surface, it doesn't look good. But, like, I mean, I'm sure confidence has been battered. And they were going well against Donegal too until, do you remember, the captain, Owen Doyle, got sent off about the gum shield, which was terrible. And they could have been two wins and a draw potentially,
and
that.
And their season to date wouldn't be, you know, probably so dour looking. But in relation to the drinking aspect, I have absolutely no problem whatsoever with that.
I think
more GAA teams should actually take that on board and take an opportunity like Kildare have taken and go out in the lash every now and again, you know, because sometimes that builds bond, it gets a team together and it really builds the team spirit.
Yeah, so maybe it's a false stat really. It sounds really bad, but from losing to Armagh until the end of the year was probably 5 months that there was no games. And then they had a Burn Cup where they would have thrown out half a team. Mm. You know, so they're really in a really tough division then, so it sounds terrible. But, like, they've got Carlow or Louth in the first round of the championship. Now, Louth are going really badly. Kildare are probably lucky in that they're in a province where the winners of Louth, if they beat Louth or Carlow, they play Westmeath or Laois or Wexford. So, like, I mean, Kildare can easily turn this around. Roscommon turned it around last year, so I don't see why Kildare can't turn it around.
No problem at all. Louth or Carlow is very much a 50-50 game. On current form, you'd probably expect Carlow to scrape through that one.
Because they'll both be Division 3 teams next year.
Division 3 teams, but I would expect Kildare to beat either of those teams convincingly in the championship.
Yeah, me too. So maybe it will turn it around. There was a lot of talk. I ignored it on Monday, lads. This cynical play and Mayo dragging the Donegal players at the very end of the game. And I'm not like, I've lost the will to talk about this because this is part of the game. Like, there's nothing. I've almost banished black card talk on the podcast because it's boring. And, like, I mean, it's not changing. What difference does it make? We were losing our minds for a while, and then it's almost like this debate means nothing. There's no appetite within the GAA to change the black card. We know it doesn't work in the last 10 minutes. It absolutely doesn't work in injury time when teams are jumping on each other. Like, you look in soccer, it's a straight red card. But still, Luis Suarez in a World Cup will handle the ball on the line to save a goal. Players will cheat at that stage of the game. Like, I don't know what the fix is. The obvious fix is a 20-metre free if you do it.
Yeah.
Or else send lads off for doing it with a one-match ban. You know, something like that. But, like, would that stop Dublin in the All-Ireland final? I don't think that would still stop them.
But I think the black card is...
The point penalty would. The 20-metre free would stop.
Yeah, but I think if the referee applied the rules properly in that situation, then the black card would be enough. Like, you know, people said there's no rule for the last 10 minutes, but you can't make a sub after 3 black cards. You can't make a sub for a black card after 6 subs. So if you were going to give 3 people or more a black card, then you're going to be down men for that last play. So potentially, if you're looking at Dublin, say 7 players could have been black carded. You know, they couldn't have brought on whatever amount at the end of that game, so they're down 4 or 5 men. Mayo will definitely score. So it comes back to the referee. If they actually applied the rule, then there is a rule there for it, but it doesn't, you know,
if the referee tagged all the Dublin and Mayo forwards, Dublin in the All-Ireland final and Mayo against Donegal, black, five yeah. blacks, you're off. You're down to yeah. you're down to 10 men.
Yeah.
And give them a play left. You
it's
know,
not his problem. It's like, fix the rules if you don't like that.
Yeah. And that's not, don't be foolish about it, thinking that it's only Dublin and Mayo that does this. It's every single team that has a lead going into the last minute or two or last couple of minutes of any game. Every team is encouraged to do it by their coaches and managers, and that's just the way it is.
And it's just new now because the short kickouts are in vogue, and like, I mean, you have to hold on to your man. But the thing about this is, it's not really a black card offence because they're just wrestling. They're not pulling them down. They're actually just standing,
holding them.
So maybe the black card offence needs to be reworded, because there are faults in the way it's worded anyways. Like, I mean, you shouldn't have to just drag someone down. That's madness. You could pull someone back really cynically
hold them up.
Like, I mean, get it, do the Les Kiss choke tackle bloody thing, and then you're laughing. Like, I mean, you can choke tackle someone and it's not a black card, which doesn't seem right. But again, like, we could spend every day on the podcast talking about offences like this, and is it going to change anything? Will the GEA reword the black card offence? I'm not sure.
Will they ever listen to this?
Will they ever listen? Do they listen? Maybe not. Right, we'll come back and we'll talk about the matches.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
I had a fella on Twitter yesterday tell me that we've all got it all wrong about Galway. That this is not a new Galway. This is the Galway of the last 3 years. They've played defensively for the last 3 years, and he couldn't understand why everybody's saying this is a new Galway. And he does have a point. There's no doubt about that. I remember being at the Division 2 league final last year and actually tweeting a picture of both Kildare and Galway playing very, very defensively that day. And there was points in that match where they had everybody back and Kildare had everybody back, even though Kildare aren't a really defensive team. And I remember the Connacht final against Roscommon, which was a very pretty defensive game that day, although Roscommon got that goal, which Galway didn't have many men back for.
Yeah.
I think the main difference this year between Galway, I do think it's a new Galway. I think the main difference is what we talked about on the show last Monday, in that for the last 3 years they've been trying to filter players back, you know what I mean, without the full time sweepers and without being ultra defensive, whereas now they're more committed to it, where there might be a full time sweeper and lads are turning around, turning with their backs to the ball and getting back into their shape, you know. So I think that's the difference. So they were, like we said again on Monday, most teams are defensive in some ways. Yep. They'll get back at some stage. It's the teams that go back and camp out down there, which I think Galway are more doing now. Also, what Galway are doing, well, we'll talk about that first, because I think that's the difference with Galway. I don't think we've seen the level of defence. We don't think we've seen the level of intensity in the tackle before. And I don't think we've seen the level of, what will we say, dark arts from Galway, which is definitely part of their play now. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think there's probably a greater understanding from the Galway players of what is expected to play that type of system. You know, for a team who traditionally have always been an attack-minded county, it does take time to blend into a new way of playing, a new system. And there's no doubt that Paddy Talley going into the background team this year has certainly got them more organised, got them improved on their tackling as well. And yes, the Senegal play comes into effect as well. But for me, there's probably a greater understanding overall across the spread of the Galway players of how to play a system like that.
Yeah, no, and exactly. And Paddy Talley's an interesting one. I don't know too much about him, but I know he was with Tyrone in 2003, and they weren't an ultra-defensive team. They were a good footballing team, but they're a bloody intense team, as
you well know. Yeah,
like, crazy intense, and I think maybe that's what he's brought to Galway.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, don't just pretend you're tackling. Get in there and bloody tackle and double up. And you see Galway now, and they're doing that, Conan. Like, I mean, there's no prisoners taken with these lads, and that's not what we associated with Galway all along.
And maybe it is something just as simple as them being back and conserving a bit more energy, because they're already back rather than filtering back and tracking. Unless you're as fit and as well trained as Dublin, it's going to be tough to have that same intensity. And I think if you are going to play defensively, it's either shit or get off the pot. Like, you know, don't do it halfway. Like, either get back and set up camp and have your energy there, tackle like mad and break together, or commit to attack. You know, I think there's no point in being this in-between sort of team.
How many teams do we see trying to play a defensive system but actually not being effective and not doing their job? Going back to the point you made, when you're back and you're set up defensive, you have to be hitting and making tackles. There's a lot of teams out there try to set up defensively, but they're only passing the responsibility across to the man, maybe standing beside them, the shadow tackle,
the problem with getting that so many men back in that defensive shell is, what do you do when you turn it over? You only really have that running game to go back, and that's one dimensional, you know. And whereas if you don't get that many men back, you might have a potential of moving that ball on down there pretty quickly. So there are definite drawbacks of doing it. But, like, I mean, Galway haven't exactly been setting the world alight on the score sheet. Only Kildare and Mayo have scored less than them in Division 1. So they're not... But it's the defence... It's obviously
conceded the least across
all divisions. So, like, I mean, it's the defence is the huge change, and it's the intensity. And another thing... In games against Tyrone, Mayo, Monaghan and Dublin, their opponents have had at least one player sent off, right? Tyrone's Darren McCurry, Monaghan's Fintan Kelly, Mayo brothers Killian Dermot O'Connor and Dublin's Owen O'Gara. So they're getting into these. Like, I mean, and it's all this psychology. We saw Donegal when Jim McGuinness took them over. Jesus, there was a change in their body language, almost to the point that we're not being bullied anymore. And I think that's maybe what Tally's bringing to them. Mm-hmm. It's this psychology of... Like, we're standing down for no one, and they're getting involved in cynical stuff. I'd say trash talking is part of their play now, and they're winding teams up. And this seems to be, I don't agree with it, I don't think you need to do it, but maybe psychologically, this is what might make these teams go, we're not being pushed around anymore.
Well, there is an element of trash talking that goes on in the game, probably quite a bit of it. I don't think the top class teams really need to revert to those type of tactics at all. They just go out and play their system, believe in their system, and go about their business in their own way. And the likes of Galway, I would say they've got enough quality players there to probably put aside the trash talking element of it as well.
Yeah, it's all forwards you named there, and Fintan Kelly, who might as well be a forward at this stage. Like, you know, so is that sort of that hard hitting and maybe the trash talk, but just as a frustrating forward as well when they're not getting space and they're just getting points in the ribs every time there's a ball.
The point to Galway maybe becoming a more defensive team and really, you know, being one of the best at it now at the minute is if they can get going forward the right blend and the right mix of it going forward, they've got quality players. Like, you look at Damien Comer, Shane Walsh, Sean Armstrong.
Shane Walsh has been struggling the last few games now. He is a player
that you would expect come championship that he will have to perform for them,
but he's not I don't think programmed for this system. Now, he's fast, but that just because
my point to this is if they can get the right blend, they can actually become, when they overturn a team, they can become a kicking team again, and the likes of Shane Walsh being an outlet, Comer being an outlet, Shawny Armstrong being an outlet, players,
they're not leaving them up there. This is the critique I've had of them.
I understand that, but this is how good teams actually transform. They go defensive for 1 or 2 years and then they start moving players further up the field. Donegal done that eventually, you know, after year one they were ultra defensive when they won the Ulster Championship in 2011, ultra defensive, but then in 2012 when they won the All-Ireland, they were leaving players up.
No, they weren't, they were breaking in bigger numbers rather.
At the goal in the All-Ireland final that Michael Murphy scored, what was that? That was a long direct ball in because they opted to leave him in. Damien Comer is every bit as strong as Michael Murphy is, you know, so if they get the right blend, they can really, you know, me and Conan will really start believing in what you were saying in the last couple of years about Galway.
Surely there's enough players, like 10, surely it's enough outfielders they get back.
That's my point.
Two half forwards.
And you've Michael Daly back in as well, Les, and he's a Ferrari type classy footballer. Does he want to be back doing that kind of rat catcher role of back dogging lads out of it and breaking up the field? He's not made for that either. Walsh isn't made for it. Comer's not made for it. Brannigan has been flying it in the league. Potentially Brannigan can do it, even though he is a bit of class about him. So leave Daly, Walsh and Comer up there. Jeez, you lads, how many do you need back? Is 12 not enough? Why can't there be a balance struck here that you're kind of got that brilliant defensive solidity and that intensity that Tally brings you and all the rest of it, and keep all the mountain or whatever you want to do that. But Jesus, have a second option up front, or else you're just going to...
That's what I'm saying. I think they eventually will realise that this is the way for more success for Galway. You know, we've got our defensive structure and it's sound now, but we, to become more of an attacking force, we've got to leave the quality players up the field and, you know, utilise that as much as possible, yeah, as well. Maybe leave them on a one-on-one situation as much as possible.
There's another way of looking at this as well, lads, and I definitely am on the side that three should be left up. Like, I mean, Brannigan and Comer have scored 320 between them from play across the league, right? And Comer's dropping back, I think, too much. He's the one that's at least staying up a little bit. But is this just the traditionalist in us saying a good forward has to be up front? You know, like a traditional forward gets scores from a pass, turns and shoots. Like, he shoots with his back to goals. That's the traditional way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Is there a new way of looking at it? You don't have to be left up there. You can still score 320 between Brannigan and Comer. Comer and Brannigan would have taken 320 from play before the league started if they were left at the top of the D. Is there a different way of doing it that traditionalists are not accepting?
Turn the clock back 20 years. How did Galway win All Ireland? Michael Donlan dropped deep. How many clips have we seen of Michael Donlan dropping deep, particularly in the All Ireland final, getting the ball up the field and being on the end of the move and kicking the ball over the bar? You know, you can actually, if you've got the quality, if you've got the pace, the burn, if you've the athleticism that players have nowadays, you should be able to do that.
Yeah.
You definitely should be able to do it. So it's not something new that has only come in to the game in the last couple of years. Michael Donlan 20 years ago was doing that for Galway. So they should have players that are able to adapt to that as well now.
Yeah, but he was one out of five. One out of five. And he did drop back and he picked up a lot of
Jeff Allen was another one. That he pulled the strings from 11 as well. But he was another player who you know, dropped beyond midfield quite often as well.
You'll get me nostalgic thinking of Michael Donlan now in a minute.
He was quality.
He's the greatest. Scoring wing forward. I don't care what anyone says. He's the greatest.
Is Jim Connolly not the greatest?
Well, when Michael Donlan got the ball, you'd stand up. Like, this is a showstopper when this fella got the ball. Yeah. Anywhere on the field.
It was. He had blistering pace. Absolutely.
Back when men
imagine Michael Donlan playing in the current Galway team now as well. And having an outlet like Padraig Joyce playing up front.
He'd be back tackling, lads. Now, Donlan went back and intercepted a few balls, but Donlan didn't really go back and do much tackling. He didn't have any interest in that kind of stuff.
You still want Coomer up at the edge of square.
That's the traditional way of thinking. He's a big burly man. Mm-hmm. He needs to be on the edge of the square. That's the traditional way of looking at it.
But if you're a manager and you have him there, like, you know that the opposition fullback's going to be sitting on the toilet for a week anticipating having Damien Comer at the edge of the square and not knowing what he's going to do when he gets the ball.
Yeah. No, it's definitely interesting. The Paddy Talley one is another one, because I mentioned the Tyrone 2003. He was with Down in 2010 and they were by no means a defensive team. They had Danny Hughes, they had Benny Coulter, they had Marty Clark,
Mark Poland.
They had Mark Poland. These lads weren't back swarming any defence. They'd be Kerry and Cole Park playing an attacking brand of football. Yeah. So I'm actually interested in Paddy Talley in that he's not blinkered as in I'm going to coach this defensive way. He obviously has different ways of coaching different teams.
He was with Derry under Brian McIver 2013-15, and the first 2 years they were very attacking. It was basically a whole approach that we'll try and score more than you. Now, it was after getting hammered by Dublin in the league final in 2014 that Derry went back to defensive shape. I don't know if that was Talley's influence, but Derry were really sort of committing to attack and trying to overrun teams.
But that's two game plans with Derry in 2 years.
Won the Sigerson last year as manager with
Mary's a very defensive game.
With Kevin McKernan, dropping back. Yeah. You know, so
fit the system to the team.
Exactly. And he is certainly a coach that you would look at and really admire in terms of, you know, he gets the best out of his team, but he realises what the strengths are of the players that's available to him.
And I'm 100% on that wavelength. You look at the players that you have and you base the game plan on those players.
Yeah.
But this is the problem I have with Galway. Paddy, you don't know that. I don't think what you're doing with Galway is suiting the players.
And he's only in a few months. Give him a real chance, you know.
And maybe he's the coach and Kevin Walsh wants to play like that and he's saying, coach this for me.
Yeah, but at the same time, don't be too critical of Galway. They haven't been defeated in the league. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are you giving them this big inquest?
And actually across the four divisions, they are the highest. They've got 13 points across the four divisions, and that's a Division 1 team. The next highest is sitting on 11 points, I think, across the four divisions.
But you're right, Willie. Like, you know, the Jim McGuinness legacy is hilarious because that system suited Donegal perfectly. Yeah. Like, every one of their players fitted into that, but then every club team in Ireland tried to do the same with completely different teams.
But you know why this suited Donegal, and it was so obvious. Donegal traditionally hand passed the ball, yeah. And like there's theories
he
thrown
says
around
the Atlantic Coast.
The Atlantic Coast. I think that's a beautiful reason. Well, I think because it's so windy up there that they didn't trust the foot pass or whatever. But you remember when they won it in '92? Donegal were known for hand passing. So you marry their traditional hand passing game with getting bodies back and working it back up the field through the hands, and instead of working it up through the hands with fellas in front of you, they're all around you, and you can actually play these intricate. It just was perfect for Donegal. Yeah. Like, but that's Jim McGuinness being an innovator. That's what I think is a bit sad when you see other managers even now using those tactics on teams, even though they could be Galway are a traditional kicking team.
Yeah.
Like, it's not in their DNA to be doing this kind of thing. But you know what I mean? That's what...
He's thinking about 98 again. That's what he's thinking.
You can just see...
Michael Donnelly.
Michael Donnelly. We knew he was thinking that.
But Damien Comer was interviewed earlier on in the year, and he was talking about this streetwise approach, because we talked about Jim McGuinness and he's trying to get Donegal that harder edge and put it up to Tyrone, and immediately... Donegal beat Tyrone Jim McGuinness's first year after not having a great league. Donegal didn't, and they beat Tyrone in a real dour game, and this was a nasty game, and under Jim McGuinness and 4 years, Tyrone Donegal games turned a little bit nasty because Donegal were obsessed about not being able to beat Tyrone for so long, and let's stand up to these, and it spilled over into kind of nasty stuff. And I don't know, like, I mean, when you were playing, Stevie, like, I mean, at what point did you say we don't want to be bullied by these lads? Was it Meade in 99, or, like, I mean, do you have to trash talk, and do you have to get into that kind of level? Or
when
does a team
I don't believe as a team we trash talked. I just believe we went out and we done our talking by playing football and by getting tore in the players.
But ye did bring the cynical play into the game, though. Ye brought the block and the runs of the 1-2
win. I wouldn't say so.
You did now. Well, okay, it was my first experience of it anyways. Right. And if you fall on the ground, you can be well sure an Armagh lad is falling down on top of you probably with their knees. Ye brought that into it.
Well, I can remember Racy McManaman falling on top of John McEntee with his knees.
That was 2005. Ye brought it in 03.
Taste of your own medicine.
Listen, no, absolutely not.
But did you not talk about doing that? Definitely must have talked about block and runs, though, Stevie, because that was a tactic, and it was a good tactic.
Certainly not. No, we were a clean cut team.
We just had a drive.
Listen, Meath were a ruthless team. We probably took something from Meath towards, you know, the successful Meath of the early 90s and the late 90s, the 99 team. They were ruthless. You know, Sean Boylan had a way about him of getting the best out of his players and actually making them a ruthless team to play against. And you know, we probably learnt a lot from the semi-final in 99, coming up against them and being defeated by them, and saying to ourselves, right, we're not a million miles. We knew we weren't far away. I've said this before, but we have to get that ruthlessness into our game. And you know, it was players learning themselves. It was never spoken about, never talked about.
What would you call ruthlessness then?
I call ruthlessness not being intimidated, not being bullied on the field, standing up to whatever challenge is thrown at you, whether it's physical or mental challenges, and just standing up to that. It's not cowering down, which we have seen many teams do in the past, many good teams do in the past, you know, lower themselves to, you know, accept mediocrity when they get to Croke Park. We weren't willing to do that.
But instead of being the people that are bullied and standing up to it, does that move into ye being the ones?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we were seen as this big physical team. Yet when we won the All Ireland, I was under 12 stone myself. You know what I mean? We had massive players. We had Kieran McGeaney, who had arms the size of legs. There's no doubt about it that he was huge. Justin McDulley was a huge player. The McEntee twins. But that was their physique. That was the way they grew up and developed. They were just huge. They were a big presence on the football field, and we probably intimidated teams before a ball was thrown in because of our sheer size, the sheer size of the spine of our team. We also were the team that brought out, you know, we fooled players, our opponents, because of the jerseys that we brought out with with the triangles on the shoulders to make our shoulders look bigger, you know. And the tight jerseys. We were the first team to bring out the tight jerseys, so that was about psychology more than anything else. So you know, we wanted to get the impression out there, yes, we are bigger and we are stronger than any other team out there. But when it came to, we had players that would get into the mix as well. We didn't have players who shirked responsibility in terms of getting stuck in and getting tore in the players. And we had a team of players that were happy to go into the tackle, and that was it. And for me, who was under 12 stone at that time, I wish it was under 12 stone now, but I learned how to win a ball coming up against bigger and stronger players than what I was myself. And if I didn't learn how to win a ball in training sessions, then I was never going to get into that starting team.
Yeah. No, it's interesting how you get from that point of being the ones and the talking in the dressing room, let's not let this happen again. And, you know, and I don't know if Galway are trash talking, actually. I should point that out. You know, there's no evidence to say they are, but they're definitely getting involved in situations, and there's malaise in their games against Dublin and against Mayo, and it, you know, it would lead me to believe that there's definitely the talk in their dressing room that we're not standing down from anyone.
It's more coming from the fact that they don't want to be, I suppose, the team that's intimidated anymore. They want to be the instigators to that there, and that's just where that comes from. You know, at certain times enough becomes enough. You know, I speak about the Armagh team for 6 or 7 years in the 90s. Kieran McGeaney, Paul McGrain, Jamie Mars, and all these boys went without even winning a championship game for 6 or 7 years. So they got to the point where they said, right, enough's enough here, quit the bullshit and let's go out and start and stand up to our opponents.
Yeah, exactly. Anything to add there, Conan?
No, you're winning games, it's that confidence. Like a defender turns over the ball and he just gives you a little push. Like it is maybe just that arrogance that Galway are carrying. Maybe that's starting a few more ruckuses, but it's just because they're so confident in themselves.
Yeah, as in they've taken the step up into the big time. Well, the proof will be in the pudding on Sunday. We'll really get a good idea because Dublin will not want to lose that game, and Dublin will be at their prepared best, I would imagine, on Sunday. So we'll definitely see where Galway are at.
Dublin losing is the worst thing for Galway. Like, you know, last week Dublin losing, like, it's Jim Gavin doesn't get a chance really to get a rocket up these boys' arses every year. So.
Yeah, and I think they kind of relish the opportunity of coming at these defensive teams because, like, I remember Alan Brogan telling me before when Pat Gilroy was the manager, and after the Donegal game in 2011, he said in 2012 they almost became obsessed with practicing that defensive system, and then they played Mayo, who weren't like that, and got beaten in a really high scoring game. But all their training sessions was based around Donegal, this system. Yeah. And like, I mean, maybe took dry off the ball, but I'd say since 2014 against Donegal, Jim Gavin has been obsessed. Yeah. I will not be embarrassed by that again. Yeah. And I think he takes pleasure in doing what he did to Tyrone last year and going, this is me as a tactician now, and that's just never happened in this team again. Yeah, so I'd say Dublin will really enjoy dismantling Galway on Sunday if they end up
doing it. Well, their motivation also comes off the back of losing the league final last year as well. So they've got more than enough motivation, going into this particular game.
Yeah, and the other 30 lads that are going to take their places. That's kind of motivating as well. Right, listen, we'll be back and have a look at the other three games.
Doherty, who's a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your program.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team, too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years, they're ready for them. I'm going to go with them, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll do this in order then, lads. So we did Dublin-Galway. So the next one is Division 2, and that is between Roscommon and Cavan. And these two teams are no strangers to each other. They've played each other so many times. They've come up from Division 3 together. Both their progression have mirrored each other. So they've been up to Division 1, they've been back down. Roscommon always beat Cavan. I think out of the last 7 games in the league and championship, Roscommon have won 6 of the 7. Cavan only winning once. So they have their number, and I don't know what that is psychologically about teams and history, and we always beat them and that kind of attitude. Like, I mean, it's a strange one.
Because
there's nothing between them. It shouldn't be 6-1.
There's very little between them, but it's probably important from a Roscommon point of view that they are leaving the dressing room knowing that they have beat Cavan on quite a number of occasions, and Cavan will be leaving maybe the dressing room with one or two doubts in the back of their head. It was interesting to note that Cavan are actually going in as favourites into this particular game, and when you look back at the last 12
are
months,
they, are you sure?
Well, they're 4-6 here to 6-4 Roscommon. That's what's printed out there in front of me.
So maybe that could be the other way around. You have to remember what I printed out there is me. It's not actually.
That's you. Okay. More than likely, it is the other way around. Then. But when you think about that, there, Roscommon are still going in to this game. It's a final, and the last final that they played in, they won. You know, and that there is a critical, I suppose, point to play on the back of somebody's mind going into an important game like this as well.
Cavan are a weird one, lads, because you're obviously two Ulster men, and What's the story with them? Like, I mean, they won four Ulsters in a row, 2011, 12, 13, 14. So the most recent one now is 4 years ago. So, like, I mean...
Under-21s?
The under-21s. What did I say?
Just four Ulsters.
Oh, under-21s. Yeah. So the first one was 7 years ago. So these guys are 28, 29. Yeah. The last one is 2014. That's 4 years ago. They're 25 this year. Are they ever coming? Like, I mean, Cavan are not a team that anyone really talks about. Like, they're kind of a... I don't mean disrespect to them, but they're kind of like a Cavan. What have they? Like, what's their Cavan unique selling
themselves.
Point?
At that level, Cavan doubt themselves. At underage level, it's a different story, different scenario. When you've got success, you know you believe that you'll continue to go out and perform and win at that level.
They shouldn't doubt themselves though, because they've a great history.
They do doubt themselves, and I know from speaking to some of the players in maybe the past year that there's a doubt there at the back of their mind that they don't believe that they're at the top level of Gaelic football yet. They've got the players to get towards the top level of Gaelic football, but if you have doubts in the back of your head, yeah. I don't want to be naming players here and putting them, you know, out yeah. there. But
actual the current players have said that.
Absolutely,
to you.
Yeah.
Right, and that's interesting.
So, yeah. There is doubts there.
He just said he doesn't want to say it.
There is doubts in the back of their mind. I don't know why, because they've had a fantastic league campaign. They've got themselves back into Division 1. So they're playing top tier teams once again next year. So I can't understand why they would have doubts in the back of their mind, especially when the majority of these players can put their hand in their pocket and pull out four All-Star under 21 medals, you know. So why would they say that there's any doubts in their mind?
They don't have enough danger up front.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest. You talk about Mayo, and it's always some stick to beat Mayo with. They don't have a marquee forward, when they've Andy Moran, who's the player of the year, and Killian O'Connor, who's the all-time top scorer. I don't buy that kind of excuse myself. But Cavan don't have one. Like, I mean, Shawnee Johnson is a marquee forward, but he's not a marquee forward in the system they play. He can't handle that ball. He can't win his own ball, and I think he's really frustrated within that system.
Is he at that level though as well?
Maybe not at the very, very top level, but he's definitely their marquee. Marquee forward, but they're not getting the best out of their marquee forward. Then you have Keane Mackey, who's an industrious forward, McVitie, who's the same. And, like, I mean, I just look at their team and I'm like, Gerard McKiernan is the one class act they have on the team, but, like, I mean, he plays full forward, then you're robbing him from midfield. They don't have a midfield without him.
Darren McVitie's a lovely player.
He's a brilliant player, but another industrious half forward. They don't have any danger inside. They're not going to, I can't see how they'll ever get above the point they're at when they don't have the danger up front. They don't have it.
I suppose to become, you know,
they're like a poor man's Tyrone.
Yeah, one of the top teams, you've got to have an inside line where, you know, it just causes mayhem every time that they go near a ball. You know, you can hear the crowd lifting up, you know, once a player of that ability gets on the ball. Gerard McKiernan is probably their outstanding player that can play walk into maybe any team in the country, but he's maybe too far out the field at times and he's not playing in close enough to goals. But if they had an inside forward with the likes of Mannion or whatever like that there, that can really get on the end of things, put the ball in the back of the net consistently, then they take their game to the next level.
Yeah, I think when they made the breakthrough was 3 or 4 years ago. They had Eugene Keating and they had Martin Dunn. And they were flying it on the inside. Like, and they still played a bit defensive. They're both gone.
Yeah.
They're left with, I don't see, like I said, I don't see the danger. They've a good half back line with Martin Riley, Kieran Brady, and Conor Minor. Conor Minor has been experimented with at centre half forward, but, like, that's solid. Like, you can't get 3 points. You can't beat Mayo, beat Roscommon in Division 1 last year, then come down to Division 2 and blow teams away in Division 2 very impressively and get back up without being a good team.
Yeah.
But you're still a little bit, no one talks about them. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, they've just won Division 2 twice. Yeah. Like, they're not. Last year, Galway and Kildare were at the top of Division 2 and you were kind of half excited about these two teams. Now, is there any excitement about Cavan?
Well,
though?
maybe the experience of them going up and getting relegated last year will stand to them next year going up into Division 1, and they'll learn from that. They will probably have improved over the course of this year with that experience being behind them, and knowing that, you know, if they don't perform on any given day, that there's only one way that they're going to go back.
Is it their game plan that makes people unexcited about them? Because, like, I mean, no, people wouldn't have any beef with Cavan.
I think it's probably the roads on the way into Breffni Park.
Or even the town itself. Getting out of it is even worse.
Tough place to go. I don't think, tough place to get out of.
You go down to that back car park, you're absolutely gone.
I don't think you're being unfair though, because there have been so many false dawns. I remember they beat Derry in a championship game in Celtic Park 2013, and they all invaded the pitch afterwards, and you just thought this county's coming. They needed, but I think they went out and got beat the next day. You know, they never pushed on. They haven't even been to a quarter final yet, like, you know, with this team. So that's usually what I think is a sort of breakthrough moment for a team, when they get to that last eight and then they start thinking further afield. But Cavan haven't even had that experience. It's just bad beatings in qualifier matches.
Yeah, it is interesting, and they haven't made it back to that quarter final, and they haven't even been putting a run together in Ulster. I think that 2 years ago they drew with Tyrone after beating someone. I can't remember who they beat before that, but it was Armagh. They beat Armagh. Armagh were in disarray. Do you remember with goalkeeper and all that with Geezer? Yeah, so that was a good win. They've actually beaten Armagh a couple of times in Ulster, but they've never taken a scalp of Monaghan, Tyrone, or Donegal, any of the big ones. They've never taken that step up, and that's the reality.
And maybe that is their downfall, because they haven't gone to the level where Donegal went to in 2011.
They went very fast, yeah.
You know, they went up the ladder at a rapid pace, and that's something that Cavan have got to do. They've got to go and beat one of the top tier teams to, I suppose, build on their own confidence and take their own game to the next level. But it's an interesting point that a team that has won, you know, so many under 21 titles at Ulster level haven't gone to a quarter final. You know,
see, they won Ulsters, you see, but they got blown away by, I think, Galway and all Ireland.
Yeah, but
they got
Ulster's
a tough competition.
You would still expect a team with that quality,
success.
You know, with success under their belts, to at least go to a quarter final stage. And you look at Monaghan at the other end of things. They have consistently over the last number of years gone to quarter finals, probably without having the success that Cavan have had at underage level. So, you know, if a team like Monaghan can get it together and go to that distance, then why should Cavan not be doing it?
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's going to be an interesting one. Roscommon, obviously, we know they have a good team, and they actually have a good forward line. Your man Lennon at full forward is playing really well. He's a big lump of a fella, and they have Donny Smith, who's on fire throughout the league, and that's not even mentioning Dermot Murtagh. So they have danger up front.
Yeah.
They have Kilroy who'll drop back, they have Devaney who'll drop back, and they have a nice kind of system going. They usually leave four forwards up. Ulton Harney, interestingly enough, played centre half back against Cork. Now, I don't know whether that was an experiment just for that one off game. Like, I mean, he's a forward, so I like Kevin McStay, and I like the way he tries out new things.
You like Kevin McStay because he gives you interviews.
He gives me good interviews. Yeah, maybe that's the thing. But they're a good team. Their weakness has always been in midfield. They have O'Rourke and Compton in midfield now, who arguably are their best midfield partnership. Enda Smith didn't even play against Roscommon. He'll have to come back into the team. Roscommon are solid, and like Roscommon, they've won a Connacht title, beating Galway in the final. Like, they kind of have made that step that Cavan haven't. And
their performance the first day out against Mayo last year should have been enough to get them to a semi-final.
Yeah. So like
they are a team that's, for me, still improving. You know, they took the heartache of getting relegated last year on board, and they're back up now. So they are. They got to an All-Ireland quarter final last year. They won Connacht. They've got a great manager. You know, I think Kevin McStay is a fantastic manager, and a proven manager at club level and now county level as well. And he's only going to get the best out of them, and they're going to continue to improve as well. And I'd be surprised if they don't make it to at least the Super Ace this year. So I'd be saying for this particular game at the weekend, they should see out the Cavan threat once again.
Yeah, no, I'd imagine so as well. Ulton Harney was on a team sheet at number 6. I have to point out, I have been caught out in this before.
Yeah, on Twitter, presumably.
Who was it? Oh, I was interviewing Conor Sweeney, and I was saying, what's Bill Maher doing at full forward? He said, he doesn't play a full forward. But I saw three different teams picked. Because you know the way papers now, they'll actually pick the team in the order of where the players have played. It's not like in the old days where you're picked by the number on your back. So I thought that had changed, and I could actually trust these team sheets, but maybe you can't. So maybe Ulton Harney didn't play centre half back. I'm going off team sheet there. I'm glad we didn't spend too much time analysing Ulton Harney as centre back. Right, the next one is Armagh Fermanagh, and I said there'd be no neutrals jumping out of their skin to watch this. This is two good teams, but this is going to be a dour contest. This is going to be a bore fest. This is Kieran McGeaney saying, I know what I'm up against. I'm not falling into the counter-attack trap. I'm not going to play that game. And this is going to be a low-scoring tactical game of chess.
This is Ulster.
I disagree.
This is Ulster 3 years ago.
I actually disagree. I think Fermanagh will try to set up defensively like they have, and Armagh will continue to play like they have, which is an attacking brand of football. It's all right. taking that type of system to Brewster Park, but when you go to Croke Park and there's bigger spaces there, you know.
Let me just say to you that they brought that system to Croke Park last year against Tyrone, and that didn't work out too well for them. So Armagh have to be a bit more tactically astute.
But Armagh's not playing Tyrone this weekend. They're playing Fermanagh.
No,
they're
but they're playing a similar system.
They're playing a similar system, but they're playing a team that they know that they can beat. And Fermanagh are also playing a team that they believe that they can beat as well. I just think that Armagh's type of play will suit them if they go in with an attacking mindset into this game in Croke Park in the big spaces, that their forwards will thrive on it, and it'll not allow Fermanagh to get the numbers back the way they have been in the league.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, we have to, with the proof in the pudding will be how many how Fermanagh have committed to this. So, like, I mean, if they're going with double sweepers, Armagh's kicking game is useless, because, like, I mean, they're just going intercepted and you're gone. You're kicking Armagh are a kicking team. And if you're a kicking team coming up against a double sweeper, your kicking game's gone. You can't use your kicking game.
But Armagh also have players who can kick points from 50, 40 yards. You know, so if the double sweepers are playing in front of the full forward line, let them stay there. You know, Armagh will have numbers out the field, get the ball to the 45 and have your shot from there. And they've got players that are quite capable of kicking the ball over the bar from there.
It's tough
and
to win a game, scoring points from there.
It is, but what it does early on in the game, if you set the stall out early on and kick 2 or 3 points from distance, the Fermanagh defenders, the extra defenders that's back playing the super system, eventually have to push out, which creates the space in back. Yeah. In the
will, but will they push out, or will just more lads not filter around that 45? Do you know what I mean? I don't know if that.
I still, in this particular
game,
it's not
easy against these defensive teams.
It's not easy, and I know it's not easy. But I just think the way Armagh have been playing, I know they've been getting results, and their performances haven't matched their results in recent times. But I still believe that the system that they play, which is an attacking brand of football, suits the players that they have. The system the Fermanagh play suits the players that they have, and I just believe both teams will try to stick to what they are best at and go into this game at the weekend, which will be interesting to see how Armagh do cope with it. I still believe that they have enough to beat Fermanagh and playing that way of play, the attacking type of football.
It's interesting that we talked at the start of the league about Fermanagh now having Seamus Quigley, Sean Quigley and Tomás Corrigan, and we have three lads that can do real damage. But Seamus Quigley's been a mainstay throughout the league. Tomás Corrigan had been out, I think he might have been injured, but he hasn't had a start since he's come back. He's been coming off the bench, and Sean Quigley hasn't featured much in the league at all. He's been coming off the bench as well. So again, I don't know, because I haven't seen Fermanagh enough to know that if they're dropping everyone back bar one, is that a choice of those three lads? Like, I mean, that, we're only speculating here because we haven't seen Fermanagh
about players blending in and suiting to the system, and I don't think with the Fermanagh system at the minute you can play all three of those players.
Right, you know, if they're committing that many men back
exactly,
to work.
Exactly, that's my belief, yeah.
Well, Sean Quigley certainly can't be someone who's up and down the field. No.
It's back to the Galway thing. Like, I think they should accommodate all three of them and make the system suit the players.
Everyone in this room would, but
but we know the type of manager that Rory Gallagher is. Yeah. He sets up his team. He believes in how he sets up his team, and you know he has got good results out of doing that there over the past number of years. So you know, why would he not? He's taken Fermanagh in the first year from Division 3 back up to Division 2. So he believes in the system that and the players that he sets out to play it. So why would he go at three when one has been working for him?
Yeah,
but it's interesting. Going back to what you were saying, will Fermanagh push out if Armagh are in the lead? Like they would have to if Armagh like played ball and just tapped it around and stuff. But they won't do that because of this, whatever it is in the GA, where you feel like you have to keep going,
to
and
there
is the crowd who will boo you and stuff, and you have to just keep playing it down their throats. And maybe that will work into Fermanagh's hands.
Yeah, I think that's it. When you're playing a defensive team and you go 3 or 4 points up, I would go back into my full back line and I'd say to my three lads in the full back line, pass it around. Make them come all the way down the field. Now everyone will jeer, it'll be a joke, the game will be a farce, but you haven't made it a farce. You're only reacting to what they're up inside the 45 waiting for you. You're ahead. The onus is on them to come down and play ball. So like, I don't know why teams don't do it more often on these teams. They actually are ahead and still play into the opposition's game plan, which is a counter-attack. Don't give them that counter-attack. You're ahead.
Exactly. No, I totally agree with you. You should have players on the ball who are, you know, very comfortable and very patient with the play, and spread it around, invite the opponents onto them. The best team that I've seen over the last number of years of playing a system like that are Slotnil, who really wait their opportunity for an opening and then go for it, you know. And the best display that I've seen them doing it against, and the best team was St Vincent's last year in the All-Ireland semi-final. You know, top quality players, but they really invited them out, you know, they waited their time. They were very patient on the ball, invited them out, and then when the opening was there, they just pinpointed the passes, that's and that's how you play it.
That's a great thing. That's exactly. And maybe you don't have to go as extreme as me and go back to your full back line, but go to the midfield. Make them come out as far as the midfield, yeah, and then pull some of them out and then go, right, we're in a position where it might not be exactly fair in there, but it's an awful lot better than what it was. Yeah. Do you know when they were just camped in? So, like, I mean, you go to the Laois Carlow game and almost the analysis is the very same. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a similar thing. You're going to see Carlow getting a lot of men back behind the ball. That's not the system that John Sugrue believes in. We had him on the show. He believes in a kick passing game. He doesn't believe in a defensive game at all. But when you play against a defensive team, obviously if you're a tactically astute manager, you're not going to be stupid, and that day is gone that managers are just stupid and say, lads, let's try and get up and get bodies and break that down.
Yeah.
That's what they want, the turnover, then you're gone. So Laois will do a lot. This will be another bore fest if Dr. Cullen Park is anything to go by. I wasn't there, but I've spoken to enough people to know that this was just Laois over and back outside the 45 as Carlow are inside it waiting, yeah, for them to come in. And like, I mean, you look at Laois full forward line, Evan O'Carroll, Gary Walsh and Donny Kingston. Like, that's by far Laois's strongest line on the field. So in a way you can understand a little bit why Carlow are going to be trying to swarm these lads out. I wouldn't be playing all three of them in there. I'm not sure if all three of them definitely would be in there. I'd only play one of the three, because if they're going to play a sweeper in front of that one, that's kind of a waste of one of their lads then. Like, you know, you've two more of your bodies outside that then, whereas if you've got three in there in front of a double sweeper, it's, I don't know, two Carlow defenders for, or it's one, five Carlow defenders and five of your forwards in there, and they're kind, yeah, of three in there are useless, and they're your three strongest players. Totally kind of got confused here, yeah, with my counting, but you understand the point I'm trying to,
yeah,
make.
Yeah, I thought that was part of the problem with Armagh last year against Tyrone. I know it's higher quality opposition, but they had a lot of boys there sort of in a position they didn't need them in, where they were protecting the full back line, but it was only Mark Bradley in there, and Tyrone were able to just overrun them in the middle third, yeah, and just pick off.
But that was Armagh, yeah, going back to a system that didn't work and didn't suit those players. I think Kieran McGeaney and Jim McCarry, who's now in the background team, Paddy McKeever, boys like that, they'll have learned from that and they'll go and play, yeah, what suits them
didn't
best.
Didn't mean to get but back in the Armagh, yeah, for Manon.
No, yeah, I know that, no, but it's playing to what suits the team best. And Laois play an attacking brand of football. They have quality forwards, they've got quality inside forwards, and for me this is probably the biggest test in Carlow football in the last 30 years. So it'll be interesting to see, does their defensive system work in Croke Park? How are they going to adapt to that there? Can these players cope with the pressure? Because there is pressure on these players going into this game at the weekend because of the expectations that they've now set themselves. They have quality players. I'm not saying anything. You know, I played alongside Brenton Murphy with Ireland. He's a top class player, one of the best midfielders in the country at the minute.
Well, but their midfield is the strongest line on the field with the two, yeah, Murphys. Like, there's no doubt about that. And like, Broderick is a very, very accurate player. You know, and then they're getting a lot of players back then to help their defence.
Yeah.
Their defence. So I'm looking forward to seeing Carlow as well. I imagine that when you're playing Carlow, because Carlow is such a good midfield, Carlow are going long with their kickouts, or else it doesn't really make sense of, yeah, having such a strong midfield. If they're going long with their kickouts, then Laois have an opportunity, if they can win those kickouts, that they can potentially get quick kind of ball into the forward line. Mm-hmm. And I think Laois need to be targeting kickouts as an opportunity where potentially teams are pushed up to be able to get some joy.
Yeah, I would love to see Carlow set up defensive, and love to see Laois go with their normal game plan of kicking the ball and utilising.
No, you would. If you want to see Laois losing, that's,
yeah,
what you,
no,
would.
No, I would, because I'd love to see how to cope with it and how Carlow can cope with the big spaces of Croke Park and play that system.
You don't listen to me at all. I told you a kicking game is useless against a team like that.
No, but it's useless in Dr. Cullen Park, wherever it may be around the country, but it's not useless in Croke Park when their spaces are bigger.
More space to break into though as well for these teams.
It's very hard to find a man with the intensity of these finals. Like, it's hard enough to find a man in general, but finding a man that's covered by a sweeper and he's in and out behind him and you've only got split second to make that pass, and you give that pass and the sweeper intercepts
quality
it.
Quality intelligent players, forwards particularly, should be able to find a way around it.
But here's the thing with Croke Park though, the scoring zone is still the same. So even though there's much more space, like, you know, the whole length of the pitch and the width of the pitch, the scoring zone is still the same. So all you have to do is still occupy that scoring zone. And sort of the rest of it outside, if they score from there, grand, you know, they won't win the game, sort of thing.
I would have more confidence in the Laois forwards putting the ball over the bar than what I would with the Carlow forwards.
You know,
and that's the reality of it. But, you know, great credit has to be given to Cardiff what they've achieved already this year. We can't take that, we can't deny them that. But this is going to be their biggest test. It's a huge game for them as a county. As I said, 30 years ago they got themselves out of a division. Approximately 30 years ago was the last time they got themselves promoted. So there's going to be pressure on these players going into Croke Park this weekend. And how are they going to cope with that?
Go on. Sorry,
I was going to say, I want to see what you were talking about. Just somebody passing the ball alongside the defensive team inside. That will be the white letter day for defensive football. If you just pass around the fullback line,
wouldn't it
win
be great?
2-0, no more.
No, you just get 1 point on the board as 1-0. You just run down to 70 minutes. Right, listen, we'll be back on Monday with a review show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.